from St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking. It may seem hard to believe, but Missouri's Boot Heel region used to be a Democratic stronghold for generations. But only recently, it's become solidly bright red. And nobody knows that more firsthand than State Senator Jason Bean, who represents Missouri's 25th Senatorial District. On this edition of Politically Speaking, the Holcomb Republican talks about his transition into Senate life and some of the big issues that may confront legislators in 2025. Let's hit the music.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, the definitive show about Missouri politics.
My promise to St. Louis was that I would do the absolute most for each and every person, starting with those who have the very least.
What I wanted to do was look and see what other states are doing.
We have to be willing to change those laws, that they are balanced and they affect everybody equally.
As somebody that grew up in the St. Louis area, North St. Louis County, I didn't know any lawyers growing up.
We got to find long-term solutions to make government better, but also to be able to provide services to people.
I don't want to leave that federal money that we've been leaving all these years on the table.
We need to be spending this money to take care of Missourians.
I thought we accomplished a lot this year, but a lot more needs to be done.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, St. Louis Public Radio political correspondent Jason Rosenbaum. Joining me in Mid-Missouri, she covers all things state government and state politics for St. Louis Public Radio.
Sarah Kellogg.
And joining us in studio, he is the senator for Missouri's 25th Senatorial District, and he is carrying on the tradition of being a Jason in the Missouri Senate.
Hey, it's great to be here, and thank you for having me on.
And what's your name?
My name is Senator Jason Bean, so I really prefer Jason Bean.
Okay. Thank you, Jason Bean, for coming on Politically Speaking. I'm really excited to have you on. You have a very unique pathway to Missouri politics, and since you've never been on the show before, I want you to tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in this wacky world of state government.
Absolutely. Well, number one, I'm a fifth generation farmer from southeast Missouri, a little town called Peach Orchard. We raise cotton, corn, soybeans, rice, all the good stuff down there. Currently in the Missouri Senate, I serve as the Senate Agricultural Chairman. Also serve as the Assistant Majority Floor Leader, serve on Commerce Committee, serve on Transportation, Public Safety, gubernatorial appointments. So that's kind of where I'm at in the Senate currently. You know what? It was an interesting road to get into politics. And back in 2002, my father ran for the 163rd District down there as a Republican. Now,
Your father was former state representative Otto Bean, as you'll mention.
That's correct. Yeah, Otto Bean Jr. So he ran that race. It was a real tough race. A Republican had never won that seat. And you know what? We did it. We won that seat. So that was we've always been involved in politics. We've been involved in politics since as long as I can remember. My dad and Bill Emerson had the very same birth date. And they were very, very good friends, stayed in our house, you know, growing up.
Bill Emerson, by the way, for people who are 20 years and younger, was the former congressman from Missouri's 8th Congressional District.
Right. And actually, he was first elected the 10th district, because that was a 10th district.
That is correct. I sometimes forget there were 10 congressional districts. I only remember 9 because I was around when the 9th congressional district still existed. But continue, sir.
Well, actually, of interest, in my office, I have a letter sent to me by Congressman-elect Bill Emerson of the 10th district. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's kind of how, you know, that's what really framed a lot of how I saw the political world. You know, saw a man like Bill Emerson, saw a person like my father come into a very Democratic district and were elected Republicans. So that's kind of how I got my first real taste into politics in Jefferson City. Once again, seeing my dad elected, helping him there. That was kind of my really first, you know, steps into politics in Jefferson City.
And your dad was a part of the 2002 House class that took the majority. What did you learn from your father's tenure in politics?
Well, you know what, I watched him. One of the things I think that was so important with my dad is he represented his district. And, you know, once again, very Democratic district, one of the poorest districts in the state of Missouri. And I watched him represent his people. And that was really important to me because, I mean, you know, we're here in St. Louis. You know, what's right for St. Louis and what is right for, you know, the Boot Heel, that's two different things. But what we saw was people come together to make the right decision, in my opinion. And that was really, really good for me to see, you know, in my younger days.
As you said, it was a very Democratic district for the longest time. Why do you think the politics of the Boot Heel has changed so much?
Well, I mean, you hear this all the time. I didn't leave the party left me. I just think that, when the people in the Boot Heel really saw how what their needs were, what their beliefs were, it aligned so much more with the current platform of the Republican Party. And, you know, economic development is a huge thing in the Boot Heel. Right to work is a big issue in the Boot Heel. And I think they just saw that alignment. And that's when you saw really people just saying, hey, well, this is where I'm aligned with. And that's where they went.
So when you ran for the 25th district seat, which, by the way, includes like Mississippi County, New Madrid County, Pemiscot County, Ripley County, does it include Oregon County as well?
So with redistricting, I picked up Oregon, Wayne, and Ripley.
Okay.
Now, when I first ran, I did not have Oregon, Wayne, or Ripley. I had Shannon, and I lost Shannon. But you've also got Butler County, Poplar Bluff.
How could I forget Poplar Bluff, the home of the Hansboroughs? I actually was friends with one of the Hansborough brothers, not Tyler, by the way. It was his brother who never played basketball.
Right.
That's my one Poplar Bluff claim to fame, but continue.
And how can you forget Stoddard County? You've got Hickory Log, Dexter Barbecue Ribs. Dunklin County, you've got Strawberry Barbecue. So, you know, you're forgetting some of the big ones there, Jason.
I am ashamed of my geographic last, but when you ran in 2020, this was no longer a competitive seat in the general, as it was even in 2012, but it was a competitive primary where you were running against a number of people who had served in the legislature or had been kind of high up in the Republican mm-hmm. Party. Why do you think that you ended up prevailing by a pretty wide margin?
Well, being a farmer, being involved, I knew a lot of people. I'm a very, very common sense person. You'll see me look at issues, and I'm a common sense guy. I think I wasn't, people saw me as I hadn't been involved. I ran against a former state representative. I ran against a current state representative, once again, somebody who had been involved in the party. And I think they kind of saw me as the person that hadn't been involved, and that's what they were looking for at that time. Being a farmer, common sense, been very involved in. Here's an example. In 2009, we had a really bad ice storm. And, you know, for 2 weeks, all I did was pulling electrical companies through mud. Always kind of been out there doing things. And I think people just saw that and it resonated with what they wanted.
You've entered the Missouri Senate at a time where there was this noticeable split between GOP Senate leadership and what was once called the Conservative Caucus is now called the Freedom Caucus. What has it been like navigating the personalities of the chamber?
You know, it's been interesting. I go back to my farming background. When you run a farm crew, you have a lot of different interesting people that you work with. And I think that paid big dividends for me in, once again, navigating the Missouri Senate. Also, going back to, you know, what we talked about earlier, living in a district where you had, you know, Democrat, Republican, and bringing those people together. So that was something that was definitely an advantage to me. I had a lot of experience with that. And so what I chose to do is, I didn't really get caught up in all that stuff. And what I did was put my head toward, you know, doing what was right for my district, passing legislation. I mean, I'm not, you know, going into that at this point, but like being able to pass eminent domain reform, which they said I could never do. But how did I do that? Just by working those relationships, talking to those people. And I didn't exclude people because, oh, you're a member of the Conservative Caucus or whatever. I didn't, you know, I included them in those conversations.
Lots of Republicans felt that the end of session was disappointing, especially after the failure of an effort to make the Missouri Constitution harder to amend. Why do you think such a major legislative priority crashed and burned?
Well, I think there was a lot of things that factored into that. Well, I could go. I could probably talk about that the rest of our conversation. But, you know, I think people
go on.
I think, you know, when you actually looked at that SJR, it wasn't the most perfect SJR. I think that there had been some conversations earlier, you know, some legislation had been passed and we had moved some legislation like the Planned Parenthood legislation had been passed. And so I think the Democrats kind of felt like, hey, we, you know, we kind of sat back on this and, you know, now you want to do this too. You've already done this. You know, the PQ, that's a nuclear option in the Senate. I think there's a lot of senators that kind of look at that and go, do I really, really want to go down that path? And, you know, one thing for me, if you're going to PQ, if you're going to use that nuclear option, let's do something that sticks. And that current SJR, I really don't think it would have passed in a vote by the people. So why do you want to use that nuclear option of something that's probably not going to pass and something that I had some concerns about for representing rural Missourians?
Speak a little bit more about why you had concerns on that for rural Missourians.
Well, I think on the affirmative vote issue where you had five of the eight congressional districts, I think that was very, very important to look at because when you look at three districts, so you got eight congressional districts and you're looking at five of those districts versus eight. So you look at the three, you've got the 8th district, which is Congressman Jason Smith's district, which is a very rural district. You've got Congressman Sam Graves' district, which is a very rural district. Congressman Mark Alford's district, which is a very rural district. And that kind of brings the rural voice out of that. So that I did have some concerns over that.
And that's really interesting to me because a criticism from Democrats on this was that it really elevated rural voices over, you know, metropolitan areas like St. Louis, Kansas City, even Missouri with Columbia, and saying that gave rural voters more power. But you think for you it wasn't even enough.
I really don't. I would have liked at least six. That was kind of where I was going with that. And you know what? I've been involved in IP conversations since, you know, my very first year in the Missouri Senate. And I tell you, I've seen this every time we get down to the end of session. We think we've got the pathway we want to go. And then it just seems to all fall apart. And I've seen that every year I've been there.
Okay, we could talk about IP all day. I know I could. I know Jason could. It seems like you could, but I do want to move on. How do you think that the array of GOP primaries will affect the Senate chamber in 2025 and beyond?
Oh, I think it will affect it quite a bit. I mean, that is so much the conversation of so many people, senators in the building. You know, that, you know, what is going to be the framework of the new Missouri Senate in 2025? Golly, we can go through so many different races from, I won't get into specific Senate districts here, but, you know, you've got five or six races that will be key in who we elect. You know, do you elect those people who are more on the Freedom Caucus, Conservative Caucus side, or those that aren't? And I tell you, we're looking at that very, very heavily. I think everybody is.
You don't have a Republican opponent for the primary, but you do have a Democratic opponent for the election, though it is likely you will be back in Jefferson City next year. So what are you expecting will be major points of discussion, especially since lawmakers failed to pass so much last couple of years?
Well, we ended session, you know, obviously with the holdup in the IP reform bill. So I think IP reform will definitely be a big discussion. We have not had a utility bill in a couple of years. So I think that will be a big discussion as well. We've got this issue with the chiefs and the rolls. I think that will be definitely.
Oh, we're going to talk about that more later in the show but continue, sir.
You know, the abortion issue, it's on the ballot this year. I think that will also be a topic. So I think those are some of the big topics that we'll see coming up in next session.
Yeah, on the abortion amendment, we were going to ask this later in the show, but are you of the mindset that that is going to pass?
Everything that I'm kind of hearing and seeing, unfortunately, yes, I think it's going to pass.
My question was going to be, is it going to pass because, and you were not in the legislature when the abortion ban was passed, but my thought process is the reasons Republicans feel like it's going to pass if it gets enough signatures is the current ban is so strict that even Republicans who do not like the concept of legal abortion are uncomfortable with the idea of an abortion ban that does not have exceptions for rape or incest or does not go up to 8 or 12 weeks, which is why this may have a very good chance of passing.
No, Jay, I agree with you, Kerr, 100%. You know, going back to looking at my district, which was heavily, heavily Democrat, I hear a lot of the same things that you're saying. I hear that out in the community. I hear that all over, to be honest. So, yes, I think exactly what you just said, not having some of those exceptions, I fear that's going to pass. I think it will.
And, you know, if you do feel like it's going to pass, do you think that would slow down or kill any momentum for passing, you know, making it harder to amend the Constitution, because then that would be a higher threshold to potentially overturn an amendment, which would be something I'm sure that you and some of your colleagues would want?
No, absolutely possible. You know, I think it brings new light to that issue. I think we just have to wait to see what the vote is of the people, and then I think we proceed from there.
Yeah, and I think that the other unknown, because people have come on this show, including Republicans, and have made predictions about like what courts will do to all the abortion laws. Because I think it needs to be made clear to everybody. While I think that this amendment is targeted at the ban on most abortions, it could repeal a lot of other abortion restrictions that have been passed. Now, I don't know if it's going to repeal everyone. I that's what Jay Ashcroft says. I can't say that that's going to happen for sure, because I don't know what judges are going to do, but I guess that could also be determinative about what the legislature does as a response, because, one of your colleagues, Senator Mary Elizabeth Coleman, has talked about putting another amendment on the ballot to either try to repeal or replace it. So that's not really a question. That's more of an observation. But is what the courts do if this pass also going to determine what the legislature does?
Oh, I think 100%. I think, you know, like I say, we've just got some we've got to see, you know, what the outcome of the SJR is on the ballot, what the vote is, and then we're going to have to see what judges do, and then I think from there we react from there in Jefferson City.
I want to shift a little to agriculture, because that does seem to be your wheelhouse. So you are the chairman of the Senate Agriculture Committee, and I'm sure you've seen lots of ads this cycle about banning foreign companies from buying land in the state, which I think is more of an issue in northern Missouri than, I guess, the Boot Heel, although I'm not 100% sure about that. You've had people like Kehoe and Ashcroft say they want to ban certain countries. You've had Igel say no foreign country should own land. What is kind of the balance here between, I guess, like acceding to this policy goal, which seems to be something that voters want, but making sure it's not like a catastrophe for the agriculture economy?
Yeah, you know, that's the thing that people don't understand in this issue. It's a very, very complex issue. So first of all, we look at some of our good foreign partners. I mean, we're sitting here in St. Louis. We've got Bayer. We've got Anheuser-Busch. These are good partners that we want to keep. Absolutely. I mean, and that's where it gets also contentious in North Missouri, because you've got Smithfield Ag, China-owned, that has a lot of jobs, that, buys a lot of, you know, it's kind of helped stabilize the pork industry in Missouri, you know, very important company that producers are, you know, contracting their hogs through. It's once again, it's a very, very complex issue. Here's something else that people don't realize, is that 40% of our ag products in Missouri, who buys them? China. China purchases 40% of our ag products. So once again, it's a balance. You know, it's kind of like going to the dentist. Nobody wants to go to the dentist, but you still got to go to the dentist and deal with that. And you need the dentist. You just don't want you don't want to hurt each other.
Yeah. And when you talk about Smithfield, whenever you see an ad from somebody saying China has bought our farmland, they're talking about Smithfield. And a lot of people who want to, quote unquote, ban China from buying farmland don't really want to ban it. They just want to, like, freeze it in place. I guess my question is Smithfield really a national security threat to Missouri? Like, they've implied that, but they haven't provided any evidence that this company, which is owned by a Hong Kong-based company, is it really a national security threat, or is this just scaremongering?
Well, I mean, I can't answer that question 100%. I don't know. But what I do know is, you know, when we look at China and some of those big risks, I mean, look at what the fentanyl. I mean, fentanyl is coming from China, and that's something that we definitely need to address. I mean, also sitting here with Boeing, I mean, when you look at security risk, I mean, China is definitely a risk. I mean, it's a twofold deal here, but I think on the ag side, once again, they've been, decent partners to work with. And going back to the ag community, they're buying 40% of our ag products. So farming is tough right now. I don't know, if you're paying attention to a lot of these commodity markets, but they're tough right now. It's hard for farmers to stay in business. So, you know, protecting those markets are important. However, on the security side, you know, going back to that side, I think China is definitely a threat to us, whether it be fentanyl, whether it be national security, they are a threat, end of story. So
do you support, like, barring countries like China from buying any more land and just sort of freezing it as it is? Or do you think that could have negative consequences?
I think the governor's executive order did some good on that. I think freezing it, could be definitely something that we need to look at. Absolutely.
But not like confiscating Smithfield's land.
No, I don't think we need to confiscate Smithfield's land at all. And, that's why we have Homeland Security that watches that very much. And I think we rely upon that. But companies like our countries like Russia, China, Venezuela, absolutely. I think we need to freeze what they can purchase here in Missouri.
We need to take a quick break, but we will be right back with State Senator Jason Bean. And we're back on Politically Speaking with State Senator Jason Bean. He is a Republican who represents Missouri's Southeast Missouri-based 25th Senatorial District. So we're going to talk about budget veto-related things, and I'm going to cede the microphone to Sarah for this line of questioning.
Sounds good. So Governor Mike Parson ended up vetoing nearly $1 billion from the state budget, 173 items in total. What was your reaction to the governor's decisions?
Well, he vetoed a few items that I had, of course, and you're never happy with a veto, especially when it's your district. However, I think the governor did his due diligence in looking toward the future, and I think there were some necessary vetoes that he did, because we want Missouri to be vital for not only this year but for many years to come, and looking at where we stand with money in the state, I think he did the right thing.
When I was reading his veto letters, repeatedly something Parson pointed to was was that recently signed education bill that eventually will require $400 million when fully implemented, like additional. Mm-hmm. Do you think that was a wise decision to make in exchange for expanding educational savings account programs?
Well, I mean, education is so important to Missouri, and there's been so much discussion. I tell everybody, you want to talk about one of the toughest votes you ever take in the Senate, it's an education bill. Because, I mean, my gosh, you've got administrators, school boards, teachers, you've got students, you've got parents. So that was a huge bill. I believe that bill definitely needed to be signed. And I think that the governor saw, the kind of money that was going to cost in the future. So I think that's why definitely you saw some of those budget cuts that he did.
And Parson also contended that the legislature took too much money from budget stabilization funds that came from the federal government. What did you make of that argument?
Federal money coming into the state, we've definitely seen a lot of that since I've been there. And definitely, that has been reduced, cut a lot. So once again, I think he was just doing the right thing, doing his due diligence. And, once again, look to the future.
Were there any vetoed items that you were disappointed that Parson struck out of the budget?
Well, like I say, now I'm talking about the 25th district. I had a hospital bill that he cut in half. I was a little disappointed in that because rural health care is so, so important to Missouri, and it's something that's struggling, really hard right now, especially in my area. I think he did his due diligence. We had a few things. Once again, we had some stuff at Three Rivers College and Poplar Bluff that was cut that I was a little disappointed in. But I think we can work toward the future. And, once again, it's don't just look at today. You got to look at tomorrow, next week, next year. And I think that's what the governor did.
And lawmakers will have an opportunity to override any of those vetoes. Now, There's this whole thing on the Senate side with veto session where typically it is the handler of the bill that brings it forward to override a veto. In that case, it would be Senator Lincoln Huff, who's the appropriations chair. And last year, he didn't bring any of those up. I'm curious if you're pretty much expecting a similar situation this veto session.
Yeah, I'm expecting the same thing. Once again, since I've been there, it just seems to be the environment of the Senate, especially Republican governor, it's just hard to override a Republican governor with a Republican majority.
Parson, even though he vetoed nearly $1 billion out of the budget, he did say that he's expecting a huge supplemental next year. And this past week pretty much said, he's not going to do a special session, but he is expecting this big supplemental. Are you anticipating that? I mean, he said it might be it's going to be millions of dollars. So, kind of thoughts on the fact that it's going to have to be a huge supplemental come January 1st.
Yeah, and we didn't bring that up for priorities that are coming into next year, but absolutely, I think that supplemental will come early. And yes, I think it will be very, very large, unfortunately.
So let's shift to a topic that both Sarah and I are very excited about as award-winning sports reporters. That gag is never going to get old, Sarah.
It's amazing. I love it.
It is never going to get old, and that is the Chiefs and Royals subsidy battle. So for our listeners who have not been paying attention, if you live in St. Louis or Southeast Missouri or whatever, Kansas is trying to poach mainly the Chiefs to move across the border. The Royals is a little bit weirder because there's rumors that they may go to Nashville. I guess it's not out of the question they could go to Kansas too, but basically Kansas is trying to use like a lot of economic development incentives to move the Chiefs from Kansas City to the Kansas side. I think this could be a very big issue for the legislature next year. What are you kind of hearing about how much state involvement may need to be required to keep these teams in Missouri?
Well, first of all, I'd just like to say, as a senator from the 25th district, it was interesting because we really didn't hear anything about anything. And then all of a sudden it blew up. And I will tell you, my friends from especially it seemed like just right around Kansas City in the farming community. I mean, they were blowing my phone up like, what are you going to do? What are we going to do this? And I was kind of shocked at that. Then I thought, gosh, just when the MUKU rivalry is kind of maybe slowing down a little bit. Here we go again.
They're playing each other soon in football. What are you talking about? That's never going away.
I believe the senator is a Mizzou alum. He has picked a side in that battle, but continue.
And my dad also played the basketball for University of Missouri. The KU rivalry is a huge deal. And I just meant that since we were out of the Big 12 conference I was in the Big 8. We were in the Big 8 when I was there. But, just when we think, that's kind of slowing down, here we go again. To answer your question, I know that the majority floor leader, Cindy O'Loughlin, just had some meetings in Kansas City with, I think, both ownerships of both teams. No, it's going to be a topic. It's going to come up. How big a topic? I don't know. I think the appetite, I can tell you in the 25th district that it's not a big topic. I mean, people are more concerned about going to the store and buying groceries right now than they are about that. And also, remember, we're big Cardinal fans down the Boot Hill. So.
All right. Yeah. You transitioned nicely to my next question, which is something I've been bringing up incessantly. Why should any lawmaker from St. Louis, Southeast Missouri, Northeast Missouri, why in the world would they have any incentive to vote for a massive subsidy package for the Royals and the Chiefs? And I'm making this argument because when the Rams were trying, or when St. Louis leaders and Jay Nixon were trying to keep the Rams, the people who were yelling the loudest were Kansas City lawmakers. And they're saying, why should we pay for this stadium? Well, sorry, Kansas City, turnabout's fair play, and I want you to answer that question.
Thanks. You know what? It's like I say, it's going to be interesting because I will tell you, I hardly heard a word about it last session. I mean, hardly a word. And then, a month after session, here we blow up. So, going back to looking at just economic numbers, I think we've just got to take a hard look at where we are. You know, I actually had some fun meetings with the Kansas Senate president. We actually had some talks about this here about a month ago. And I think everybody's just kind of looking at everybody right now saying, what are we going to do?
Because it's not the same thing as the Rams. The Rams are going from St. Louis to a completely different market, and there's no football that's ever going to come back to St. Mm-hmm. Louis. This is essentially keeping this team in the same market, but moving it 10 miles. And, like, yeah, I get it. There's probably money that is involved with the state. There's a philosophical blow to Kansas besting Missouri at something. But I'm looking at this from dollars and cents value, and I'm just not seeing, like, the cost-benefit return for the state for doing this.
Okay, so here's just a Jason Bean, Southeast Missouri Senator opinion here, who remember, when I think about St. Louis football, I think Jim Hart and the St. Louis Cardinals. So remember that's how I feel. I think the Hunt family, I think that their legacy is very important to them. I think Arrowhead Stadium is very important to them. I don't see them leaving. That's just a Jason Bean gut common sense that says they want to stay right there.
From a philosophical perspective, why should the state government shell out any money to keep these teams here through stadium subsidies when the owners, who are quite rich, you know, they could easily pay for the stadiums themselves?
I think absolutely you're hitting right where I think the legislators are going to feel of why are we doing this? Why are we not investing into infrastructure? Why are we not investing into companies coming into Missouri that provide jobs? We've got the Mississippi River. Why are we not investing money into there? That's where I think, when those senators and representatives kick back and look, I think that's what they think.
Governor Parsons suggested it may be possible to put forward an incentive package without the legislature signing off on it. Would you agree with that approach?
I'd have to look and see what that package was before I would say thumbs up or thumbs down.
Should Parson even be putting forward a proposal when he's not going to be in office after 2025? And especially because two of the major Republican candidates, Ashcroft and Igel, do not support state subsidies for the Chiefs or Royals.
Well, I think it's a timing issue. I mean, this is coming up now, and I think you really can't kick that can down the way too much if you're going to address this. I think you do need to address it now with Kansas being as aggressive as they are. So I do think, once again, when I'm putting my, perspective hat on here of, if you're the governor, yeah, I think you got to move right now. Or not right now, but you've at least got to make those, you got to put it out there.
So we want to talk about the election as well. Have you endorsed anybody in the gubernatorial primary?
I actually posted a video to my personal Facebook page. Mike Kehoe and I are very good friends, and I am definitely supporting Mike Kehoe for governor.
Usually when you do Republican primaries or primaries of any kind, you're always like, well, these candidates are all kind of the same, and it's really a personality contest. I don't think that's the case for governor. I think there will be a very different state government if Mike Kehoe, Jay Ashcroft, or Bill Igel are elected. I want you sort of to respond to that observation.
No, 100%, because I've worked with all three of those, and I'm really not going to sit here and talk bad about anybody. I don't do that. But I will just tell you that, just first of all, the Mike Kehoe story. I mean, a guy who, youngest of six to a single mom growing up here in St. Louis, working at a, Ford dealership in the Wash Bay as a, basically a kid to support his family, having a love for agriculture, buying a farm. I've been on that farm. And, they didn't buy a farm that was already built. They had to kind of build the farm. They built the infrastructure to it. They did it themselves. Going back to things that matter to me, when you're on that farm with him, he is the one who's getting up early. He's taking his horses out. He's grooming them. He's checking them out. He's on the tractor. He's doing it. And that resonates a lot with me because, once again, it's you can always say, oh, yeah, I own 40 acres. I'm a farmer. Are you really a farmer? Are you really into that? So and he is. And that means a lot to me. So I think for somebody that, once again, from St. Louis here, understands how important our urban areas are in Missouri, people who understand agriculture. He's one of those people who understands how important our number one industry is. I can't think of a better person to run the state of Missouri.
So if Jay Ashcroft or Bill Igel wins the primary, do you think that there's any chance that one of the two major Democratic gubernatorial candidates could make it closer than if Kehoe won?
Possibly, but I don't think so. I don't think
Missouri's just become so Republican and Donald Trump's going to be on the ballot that it's just going to make it almost impossible for Democrats
right.
to win. That's your view.
I do. I think with an Ashcroft and Igel win, I think Jefferson City is going to be interesting. I think it'd be really interesting to see that environment.
Something else that could be on the ballot in November would be an initiative petition that would legalize sports betting in Missouri. What do you think of that?
You know what's interesting? In the Boot Hill, Missouri, literally I get texts at least 3 or 4 times a week saying, we want sports betting. We want sports betting. I mean, I get that all the time. Understand where I live. Arkansas is 6 miles. Tennessee is not very far. And I'll tell you this kind of a quick story. We were delivering grain into Tennessee. We were delivering some seed beans into Tennessee. And I had a truck that actually broke down on the very first exit going into Tennessee on a Friday afternoon of all times. So I'm over there working on it. And I see these people that keep on exiting that exit. And then they would sit there for a little bit and they would go back to Missouri. And I'm like, surely not this many people have, you know, gone the wrong way. Well, you know what they were doing? They were placing bets. You could see them on their phone, and I finally figured it out. I mean, these people are placing bets, and because I talked to a few people. We were close to a little town at Crothersville, Missouri, and I said, hey, I told them that story, and they said, oh, yeah, everybody runs over there and places their bets. So, once again, I get it all the time. I personally have no problem with it, and I think we need to pass it.
Yeah, you know, this issue is on the ballot after years of it not being able to pass in the legislature. Do you have any kind of disappointment that the legislature wasn't able to kind of craft this themselves and that they're kind of beholden to whatever is going to be on the ballot?
Yeah, goes back to all that division that we were talking about earlier with the Conservative Caucus, Freedom Caucus, everybody. You just saw that issue getting put with the VLT, gray machines, et cetera, lottery machines issue, and it was a mess. That's all there is to it. It was just a mess. So going to the ballot, I think it simplifies that, and unfortunately it does.
Well, Senator, thank you so much for coming on today. We will have to have you back in the future because you were a fabulous guest, and not just because your first name is Jason. Politically Speaking is a product of St. Louis Public Radio, which is a part of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. You can find all of our political coverage at stlpr.org. And Senator, where can people find you on the World Wide Web where you want to be found, including like social media accounts?
You know what? We've got jasonbeanforsenate.com. We've got Jason Bean for Senate on Facebook. I think we're on about everything on X, Twitter, whatever.
Are
all
you
that
on
is.
TikTok?
We might be. I don't know.
I doubt it.
No.
I mean, I'm barely on TikTok. I'm just reposting my Instagram videos on there. But
Facebook's a good spot. So,
all right. Well, thank you very much. And until next time, so long. Politically Speaking is produced by Sarah Kellogg, Rachel Lipman, and me, Jason Rosenbaum. The show is edited by Fred Ehrlich. Read all of our coverage at stlpr.org. And if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to Politically Speaking by searching the term Politically Speaking on Apple Podcasts. From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking.